The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod. We're coming to you live from our studios in Woodland Hills. It is Monday, May 15th. So excited to be here with you guys live. The year is 2023, because I know this will be archived forever and ever and ever. Which brings me to my next point, which is that you can be watching any of the shows that we've done in the last, we're in our 13th year now. So we are officially teenagers here. This show is a teenager, which means that sometimes it's going to have temper tantrums. We're all okay with it. And hormonal influxes, which I'm prone to anyway. So excited to be here with you this morning. I want to point out that we are live right now on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and about a dozen other sites. Our fabulous Traven will get around to showing you what some of those sites are before we get too much further in. I do want to let you know that our entire show is meant to be to provide information and inspiration to the autism community around the world. And when I say autism community, I'm referring to that larger autism community that starts with individuals who are themselves on the autism spectrum and then includes everyone who loves them. So if you fit into any of those categories, then we're glad that you're here, and we hope that you will ask questions that are important to you, because, you know, sometimes when you ask a question, you're answering a question for somebody who didn't feel empowered. I hope you all feel empowered, but sometimes you don't. And often you don't know what question to ask until somebody else asks the question, and then you go, oh, look, there are all these things that I didn't know about, or that I didn't know that that was even a question. I didn't know that anybody else was experiencing that. So I hope that you will ask questions, because I will tell you that one of the most exciting things for us here is when you guys write in and we get to talk to you live and in person. We do a lot of different shows here on the Autism Network. This is Autism Live, and on Mondays right now, we've been doing what we call parent-to-parent talks, where I, as a parent, I like to refer to myself as a pony, a parent of a neurodiverse individual, share with you tips and tricks that I've learned from the experts that I've been talking to for well over a decade, but also the other parents and myself, things that I've learned along the way, because part of my mission is to make sure that you have the opportunity to have it easier than I did. It doesn't always work out that way, because the world changes and your challenges are different than mine, but it's my hope to help you to get through and save 5 minutes and $5. That's really what I say to myself and have for, you know, 13 years now. If I can save you 5 minutes and $5 and I can make you feel good about the journey that you're on the way, then I'm glad that I was here. That's, I think, what I'm here for. So, I mean, on the planet for, right? To learn and to help. And that's the promise that I made when my son was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2.5. And I didn't know what to do, where to go, who to talk to, which line to stand in. And the deal that I made on my bedroom floor, I said, please, God, help me to know what to do, make it clear to me. I promise I will do whatever you show me to do. And when my child is doing better, I will make sure that I can help whoever I can help. I'm trying to live that promise every day. And I'm glad to have you here with me to do this. Now, today, for our parent-to-parent talk, we're going to be talking about 10 powerful techniques to use to boost language skills in autistic individuals. So, individuals that are on the spectrum. So, I first need to give the disclaimer that everybody's different, and that one of the biggest, I think, pluses, but also one of the biggest challenges that there is in the world of autism, inside that community that has individuals on the spectrum and then the people around them who love them. One of the biggest challenges that that community faces is that there is not just one type of autism. There is not just one type of person on the autism spectrum. It is literally referred to as a spectrum because there is every color in the rainbow. And so when we're talking about helping and supporting individuals who are on the autism spectrum, it's really hard to just go carte blanche, well, there's this, and everyone should do this, because we're talking about a rainbow of people who need different things. So this is a very broad topic about how to support them with language skills, and we're going to try to whittle it down and get more specific as we go along the way, but be thinking about for yourself or the person that you love, okay, where do they fit into this strategy? And I'll see if I can help you, but write in and be specific, and then I'll use that as a specific example, okay? So if you watch these shows, you know what we like to do in the beginning is I like to blaze through the 10 things, and then I go back and do them a little bit more specifically. But for those of you who are short on time, right, we want to be able to make sure that you have time to see all of them. Okay, so I call this 10 ways to grow language in individuals with autism. That's the way I talk. And so let's take a look at what number one is. Well, sometimes it doesn't do it when I first do it, and then, oh, it's not doing it at all, Traven. Okay, number one is to use visuals, because it's like, if you think about this, we all use visuals, and it's a base way of communicating that people tend to understand. You don't believe me? Go try to drive and never look at a street sign ever again. Those are visuals. They help us to know what to do. Walk into a restaurant that's a fast food restaurant. You don't even know where to get in line unless there are visuals that tell you. And visuals can be text, or they can be pictures. They can be infocons. Fred, I got your message. We're goosing the volume, but also check the volume on your computer, and if you're using headphones and you're only putting one in, try putting them both in. We've had a lot of issues with that. But anyway, visuals. Visuals are very important to us, so why wouldn't they be important to individuals who are on the autism spectrum? And if you're somebody who is going to another country, you're especially tuned in to the signs because you're not understanding the spoken language. Because visuals work. Use visuals wherever you can. Okay, number two, utilize teach functional communication at all times. I find that a lot of people don't know about what functional communication means, and then sometimes they don't, I'm going to say this, don't get offended, but sometimes they don't respect functional communication in the way that it needs to be respected. Example, we say that there is a child here who is struggling to get vocal communication. So the team goes to the parents and they say, we want to start using an iPad and with icons that will help this child to be able to speak. There's an emotional impact that it has for the parents, and we see some parents saying, no, I want you to work on speech. I don't want us to be get gummed up in this. We're going to talk more about this, but this is completely wrong. Studies time after time have shown us that if you give that assisted technology, you're actually going to, your hope of getting to speech is faster and more efficient. I guess that's faster, right? You're more likely to be successful if the child wasn't speaking and you gave them an iPad than if you continued to drill on vocal language, right? But here's the other problem that parents, they're like, oh, no, we use the iPad. The iPad is, that's his mode of communication. It's absolutely important. And then they go, okay, it's time to go outside, but it's raining. Let's stick the iPad in your backpack. No. That is not respect for functional communication. I know it doesn't feel like it's disrespect, but it is. Stop and think about it. Would you turn to your other child who's capable of speaking and say, it's raining, so you don't get to talk now? We wouldn't do that. So we have to be respectful of functional communication. We'll talk more about this in a second. And we got to use it all of the time. Moving on to number three. It didn't do it for me again, Traven. Oh, there we go. Or is this four? This is four. I went too far. Okay, three. We're going to reward approximations. You see that I've got goalposts in the picture there because we're constantly setting up a goalpost somewhere. Okay, that's the goal. But every time somebody kicks in the direction of the goal, we're going to reward it. That's how we get to speech. If we decided that, well, I'm only going to reward you when you can stand and give a thesis, defense, we'd never get there, right? If I say fish and you say you're going to get a reward if that's where you are. And then what we're going to do is we're going to pick up the goalpost and move it. But we're going to reward those approximations. Number four, we're going to reward requests, and that means manding and man training. So you want something, we're going to reward you for asking it for it. But remember, we're going to reward approximations, right? So manding is asking for something. It isn't always vocal. Let's always remember functional communication. You can point to it. And that's great. And if you point to it and you want it when we're doing man training, we're going to give it to you. And that's how that's going to roll. Okay, we'll talk more about this in a second. Number five, we are going to give attention to communication. This also slays me, is that we all of us, myself included, say we want our kiddos that are on the spectrum, whether they're, small children, teenagers, adults, we want them to be able to communicate their needs, right? I don't know a single parent who doesn't feel strongly about that, right? But then there are times when we will ignore them. And it's part of being a human being, but let's stop that. Let's reward all communication. So let's not reward, let's give attention to communication. So, but a lot of times it's inconvenient. You're on the phone and that's when your child decides that they're going to point and, really try to get your attention. Give attention to communication. We need to be doing that. We're going to talk extensively about this. This is not a repeat, Parker. This is new. Okay, number six, we're going to work on oral motor separately and in a fun way. If you have a desire to speak and you're trying, you're doing that approximation, but people never understand what you're saying, then it's not rewarding and you give up. So we need to work on the muscles of the head and face so that we can correctly articulate enough so that people can understand us. But if we do that while we're working on the hard thing, which is language, it can be very, very frustrating. So we're going to work on oral motor separately, and we're going to work on it in a fun way. It's okay, Parker. Glad that you're here. Number seven, so important. We're not going to take frustration personally. We just talked about how if we're working on one thing and working on another thing, it can cause frustration. Some of this is really hard for our kids. If it weren't hard, they would have just started speaking. But it's hard for them. And we're going to be asking them to do some things that are hard for them. We have to make it fun. And we have to understand that sometimes they're going to get frustrated. And it's not that they're frustrated with us, and we cannot afford to take it personally. I love that my son said to me years ago, frustration, no one ever died from frustration. And frustration is just a sign that things are about to change. Okay, so when your child is frustrated, instead of getting frustrated that they're frustrated or getting mad that they're frustrated at you, try to put it in a better context for them and for you. You can language it and say, yes, you're feeling frustrated right now, but you're doing a good job and what you're doing is important, right? And reward them, but don't take it personally. Okay, number eight. It's that kiss thing, right? Keep it simple, silly. We're going to keep your communications simple so that we're working on the receptive language. And if you go to a foreign country and somebody says to you, you have no idea, right? But if they say huchta and they're pointing at the coat, you know that huchta, I'm making this up, no language is it huchpa, huchpa is the coat because they kept it simple and they pointed to it. You're going to keep it simple as well. Okay, number nine is bubbles are an equivalent, that you are going to use things that are really super rewarding that work on oral motor, that that is something that the individual is excited by. Now, if it's a very little kid, my guess is bubbles is going to work because bubbles are fabulous. You have to make a to blow, right? And there is the sound of bubbles, right? That's a very wonderful plosive sound to be working on with kids. And then they get the bubble. If they say buh, they get the bubble, right? Super reinforcing. But if you have a teenager, maybe they're not going to be into bubbles. Maybe they're going to be into something else. But finding that perfect thing that's reinforcing and hopefully works a little bit on oral motor too, but that they're going to want, really important. And number 10, which is really the first one, but I saved it to the end because I wanted you to see these other things, get you excited about it before I say to you, meet them where they are. Everyone is in a different place with their communication. I'm in a different place than you're in with communication. And our kiddos are for sure in a different place, whether they are children, whether they are teens or adults, each of them is in an individual place. We have to start where they are and accept them where they are and enter into this loving relationship where now we're going to try to build a skill. There's a lot of emotion that comes into play when we're building language. And so but if you keep it here, meeting them where they are, then you get the connection like there is in the picture. This loving, because that's communication too. And it's not going to look like this with all of our kids because some of our kids, eye contact is not the warm squishy for them, right? It might be a handhold. But we're going to meet them where they are. I'll talk more about this in just a second. So those are our 10. Let's go back to the beginning. And Joanne just made it on. Happy Monday and happy Mother's Day to you. I'm sending you a hug. I was sending you a hug yesterday too. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning and let's tear this down and build it back up, right? Okay, so using visuals. As I said before, we all do this all the time and we kind of don't acknowledge it. But I know there's a whole lot of things that are happening, and I'm a little bit sensory sensitive. I don't qualify for a diagnosis of anything, but I'm pretty sensory. It's very easy for me to get overloaded, and I always think, man, if it's easy for me, what's it like for our kids, right? And so let's say you walk into a new place and there's just so much going on. I think about the first time I ever went into Grand Central Station, right? There were so many things and there's somebody on the loudspeaker going, and it sounds like I don't know whether they're saying the building is on fire or track number 5 is leaving for Poughkeepsie right now. I have no idea because it's muffled and I can't understand it. And I don't know how anybody can understand it, right? And so the thing that I got to tune into is the signs. There are signs that show me. I can also tune into where are people going to line up, but sometimes that is disconcerting because I don't know about you, but I've gotten in a line before and then realized a half hour later that I was in the wrong line. I'm in line for something that I don't want or need, right? Now I tend to ask when I get into is this the line for this and so? But I've also done that and gotten behind somebody who didn't ask and they were like, yes, but they didn't know. So visuals are important. And it doesn't mean that you hang up stop signs all over your house, but it does mean that you can put pictures on things, and they can be pictures with text. That if you're trying to grow language, I mentioned this on the show the other day, and this really got me thinking about it, that when I was in college, my dad had a stroke. And it created this thing called aphasia, where my dad, who was brilliant and was a technical director for television, suddenly he lost the ability to match what he was seeing with a word that he had known previously. So his brain, he could still speak. And there are some people that have a stroke that the mechanism to connect brain to vocal cords is hampered. That wasn't his thing, but his ability to look at that and say, camera, he would look at that and he might say orange juice. And so there was this process of where we had to reconnect his brain to the words. And we were told that we should take all like 20 things a week that he used a lot, and we should put a little post-it or an index card, because I think this was before post-its, an index card on items with the words. Now, for younger kids, we might put a picture of the thing with the word, and we can put it on the thing, or we can put it on the wall, so that, you know, we can look at the wall and go, which one of these things do you want? And there's a picture of it, and there is the text of it. And the thing that we know through research is that pathways begin to get built in the brain, and that the more information we have, the quicker the pathway gets built. So using visuals is critical. If you want to help someone grow language, you can't expect them to just be able to dial down all of the sensory in their life and hone in on the thing that you want to talk about. That's an expectation that's really out to lunch. So use visuals. Think about what part of the day is really hard for you or for the loved one that you have that is on the autism spectrum. And especially think about when are they the most frustrated? Because I'm going to guess that's when they're having the most time communicating their needs. It might be during the morning. And it can be as simple as putting together a series of pictures that shows the clock and, you know, first we eat breakfast and there's a picture of breakfast and it says breakfast. And then it shows the clock and it shows what time on it and they don't even have to know how to tell time. If you have the clock and it says that it's this time and you point to the clock and it says that, they don't need to know that that's 8:20, right? They're seeing it. And they're knowing, oh, that's when I put on my shoes. And you just have to point to it and say, it's time to put on our shoes. And it has a picture of the shoes and it says shoes, right? That these kinds of things make inroads to language, but it also helps to reduce anxiety because we have an idea of what's going on. So definitely want to encourage you to use visuals. Parker says, is letterboards antiquated technology for communication? Is it useful with people with higher support needs? I saw the documentary Spellers recently, and it was so intriguing, and I want to know if they are a good option. You know, I saw it recently too, and we're trying to get the director and the editor to be on the show. It's a very interesting documentary. I really encourage people to watch it. Obviously, there still needs to be research done on this because there's lots of controversy that swirls around it. But I don't think it's antiquated technology. I think that it's a great stepping stone. And what I have seen in people where I have seen the letterboards be really effective, they start with the letterboards that are the stencils, then they move to them on the sheet. And you saw this a little bit in the documentary. And then they move to one finger typing, and then they just move to typing. And I've seen people that was really effective with. So it's just a stepping stone. Joannie says, happy Mother's Day and sending you hugs and love too. Ooh, okay. So visuals, really, really important. And I do think for some of the people that I know that have used that facilitated communication, the spelling techniques, I think that the visual of having the letters directly in front of you and being able to hit them, I do think that that's a form of a visual. And if it works, it works, right? So let's, you know, but give it visuals. And think about all across the spectrum, you know, you might have somebody that, you know, you're like, well, he's talking, but we can't get to conversation. Okay, we'll use a visual. So you put on a card a question mark, right? And so I sit there with a question mark in front of me and I say, how was your day? And I point to the question and I ask you, how was your day? And then they're supposed to respond, right? And as soon as they respond, I push the question over to them. And now that's a signal for them to ask me a question. And so they ask me a question and I answer it. And then they push the question over to me. And that's how we teach them how to volley back and forth, right? Visuals are great. Use a visual wherever and whenever you can. Parker says, I follow one of the people in the documentary. I'll find her info. She's a sophomore in college now and is very successful. Wonderful. Okay, so visuals. Visuals, super important. I encourage you to use them. We already do this, but use it to the maximum with the individual that you love on the spectrum. My husband uses visuals to help him to remember to take the, you know, if he's mailing a bill, he puts things in a place. He left me a visual yesterday to let me know that Happy Mother's Day and that the dogs had been fed so that I didn't have to do it. Visuals. Embrace them. Okay. So number two, this functional communication. Functional communication means that I have a way of getting my needs met. I have a way of communicating with you so that I can meet my needs. And you know what functional communication says? Everything's on the table. Everything's on the table. So maybe I'm going to say it to you, but maybe I'm going to point. Maybe I'm going to grunt. Maybe I'm going to show you a picture of it. Maybe I'm going to gesture that I want it. Maybe I'm going to sign it with fingerspelling. Maybe I'm going to put a pencil through a stencil to be able to do it. Functional communication says it's all good and that you as an individual have a right to communicate your needs, and we're going to take it any way and every way that we can. I love this. I want to live in this world all the time where we say that all communication is valid and we don't devalue any particular kind of communication, right? And I don't think that people mean to, but when we prize speech above everything else, we kind of do. And I'm not saying that speech is a bad thing. I think we all hope for people to be able to speak one day, but we shouldn't devalue the way they are speaking now. I kind of feel like this is the language thing too, you know? That I always feel I don't think embarrassed is the word. I'm personally embarrassed when someone will apologize to me because they come from somewhere else and they don't speak English as fluently as I do. That, you know, maybe French is their native language and they'll say, "I'm so sorry, I don't speak English that well." And I feel personally embarrassed. And I always say, "What are you talking about? English is your second language and you..." English is my first language, and French is something I took in ninth grade. I can't even tell you where to find the cheese in French. Why are you apologizing to me, right? You're speaking two languages better than I'm speaking one. I don't think you need to apologize to me, right? And I think that's where we need to get with functional communication. It's like, it's valid. It's just valid. However you communicate, valid. And I'm going to, as we say for number 10, I'm going to meet you there. Now, is it great to learn more languages? Is it great to have more methods of communication? Sure, absolutely. But let's not devalue the one that we have in order to gain a new skill. So let's value functional communication. Let's utilize it and the tools, and let's do it all of the time. So we never, ever, ever take away somebody's method of communication. This can be really hard. I have a loved one who is progressively going deaf. I guess I just have to make myself comfortable with that is the phrase, is progressively going deaf. And, you know, there's a lot of feelings for everybody around that. But they had been really making do in their life for over a decade by reading lips. And so I think a lot of us didn't realize, didn't notice. And then with masks, the way that they communicated and received language was greatly hampered and everything sort of got stepped up. And as a result, I am trying to learn sign language now because I don't want to be behind on being able to communicate with this person. Do you know what I mean? So we have to be able to give everyone functional communication all the time. So if someone is wearing, say, bone conducting hearing aids, we don't take and put them in the drawer. We don't take somebody's hearing aids away from them. We certainly don't take somebody's iPad or assistive technology away from them. I gave the example about being in the rain earlier, and I know we get very protective of very expensive technology, but that is a reason to include it in your homeowner's or renter's insurance policy. It is a reason to have it listed in your health insurance as something that is medically necessary for them to be able to communicate. It is a reason to ask for or pay for the really expensive thing that goes around it that makes it so that it can fall into the toilet and still survive, right? That it can go into the swimming pool, that it can be in the rain, that it can be tossed across the room, and that if it breaks, it's covered. There are some really great cases that you can get for instance, for an iPad that, you know, it then covers the iPad. Should anything happen to the iPad while it's on, it's covered. I insist on having OtterBoxes for my phone because I would have had to have had 13 phones. I won't say that it's the ugliest thing, but it's certainly not the prettiest thing. But I know what my limits are, and I need to have my phone. And I don't need it for assistive technology. If I had a child that needed that, I'm telling you, invest in whatever you can to ensure that it's going to stay as safe as possible, and because we don't want to be having to replace it every other week, right? But if it needs to be replaced, that you have coverage for it, that's real coverage. You know, there's a lot of bad coverage out there, right? Parker says, same with me and Spanish. I know very little, if any Spanish now. I barely pass Spanish 1. And I used to be considered fluent in Spanish, but if you don't stay up on it, right? But nobody needs to be able to apologize. If you know 5 words in Spanish, woohoo! That's great, right? We're not apologizing for what we don't know. We're celebrating what we do know. And Fred says, master a piece at a time to build a full masterpiece. I love that. Functional first. Yes. Amen. Parker says, my Santa career, I'm learning sign. Mike Chapman is a great teacher. Kobe Bird turned me on to an app that I'm doing where I'm gaining a little bit of, I'm building that masterpiece, gaining a little bit at a time of the sign language. Joannie says, I pay a ton for cases to protect technology. I drop them all the time too. Yeah, I think it's well worth it. It's an investment that you make. If you're going to spend that much on the device, spend on the case so that it's protected. And check your coverage to make sure that it's protected. And make sure that you give access to it at all times. I think a lot of people, it's hard with iPads, for instance, because we use iPads to communicate, but then they're used for fun and boredom, and they're used for learning and all these other things. And there are settings, I can't profess to be good at this, but there are settings you can put on the iPad that if you're using it as a AAC device, that there are times when you can push a button and it locks all other functions except for their communication device. Because people say, well, they have to go to bed, and if I give them their iPad when they go to bed, then they're going to play a game. Excuse me. Bypass that. Make it, find out what that thing is, how to lock it. I'll get somebody on to talk about it. But now I'm going to have the hiccups. This is not good. But you need to be able, you know, when you go to bed, you have your ability to communicate. And if your child needs that to communicate, then it gets to be on their bedside table so that, heaven forbid, there's an emergency in the night, they have a way to communicate. Super duper important that we don't ever take it away. I especially want you to be mindful of this at school. I can't tell you how often we hear in IEP meetings that the child only has access to their speaking device for certain hours because there was a behavior that was happening that, it, you know, other kids were looking at it or whatever. No. We have to advocate for our loved ones and make sure that they have their whatever means of communicating has to be available to them 24/7. Please hear me when I say that. It's so important. And a lot of times we will inadvertently do this. We're not bad people. It's just we're not entirely thinking of this as something that is critical to them, and we have to. This is a human rights issue. So forgive yourself if you've gotten it wrong, and be vigilant, and be somebody who fights for your kiddo that they have access to this all the time. Get known as that. If later on when your child graduates and they go, oh, that's the mom who's militant about her kid always has to have their device, great, make T-shirts, but that's something that you do want etched into your tombstone. He advocated for his child. She advocated for her child so that they had a way of communicating. What a great thing to be on your tombstone. Okay, but don't die yet. Okay, number three, rewarding approximation. So this is a really important thing, and of course we could go into all the whys and wherefores, but when somebody is learning something difficult, we want to get to the reward as quickly as possible, right? Because, by the way, that's what science has shown to be more effective at getting a learner to want to learn longer and want to learn more. So, for instance, I said Kobe Bird turned me onto this app that teaches me sign language, and it's amazing, and I do these things on the app, and then it gives me a reward. It gives me a gold sticker. It says, you've finished the thing, and I can sign something, and if I don't get it right, it still gives me a sticker. It's just not as big of a sticker, right? And it keeps moving my goalposts further away. Why? Because that is what the science of good teaching is. That's not just the science of autism. That's the science of good teaching, that we're going to help somebody to get to the reward. And as they work harder, we're going to give a bigger reward. As Dr. Grampuchet says, we're going to make it fair. You do more work, you get a bigger reward, right? But in the beginning, I can't just say, oh, you know, if I say to the child, say cookie, right? And the child goes, meh, because that's all they can say. That's all that their oral motor allows for. I can't be like, nope, you're not getting it right, right? That's not the way to motivate somebody. So if I say to a child, say cookie, and I go, kuh, and they go, eh, in the beginning, I'm going to go, good try. That's a good try. You're really, really trying. And I'm going to give them the praise, and I'm going to give them a little bit of reward, right? But then I'm going to get right back, and I say, kuh, kuh, kuh. And then when they go, kuh, I'm going to go, yeah. Now, is that where I want to end up? No. Is cookie even where I want them to end up? No. Right? If we wait till we get where we want to get, before we reinforce anything, we'll never get there, right? So we're gonna reinforce and reward approximations all along the way. And I always refer to this. There's a TED Talk that you can search up about a child, a typically developing child, learning how to say the word water. And they were able to they brought the baby home from the hospital into a house that was rigged with cameras and microphones and everything, and they recorded every breath this child took for years. It was the scientist's child, and he and his wife agreed to this. But they're able to splice down into 32 seconds all of the times that the child seemed to be saying water, and it starts with blah, blah, and it ends up with, you know, in the last 5 seconds is water, 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 right? But 32 seconds of blip, 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 it takes a lot to get to water. And we're not making fun of that. Those are stepping stones along the way, and they were reinforced. So they were rewarded. So we are going to reward accommodations because it's approximations because it's part of meeting them where they are. Remember, wherever they are, we want them to get to a reinforcer, a reward, as quickly as possible. And then once they get used to that, then we're going to move the goalpost just over a little bit, just a little bit, not a lot. We're not going to say cookie, and when they say the, we say yay, right? We're not going to keep saying yay. We're going to keep pushing, say cook. And then they say, and we make a big deal out of it, right? And then we go, cookie, cookie, until, you know, and we just keep moving there's always an opportunity for a reward, and we keep moving it. Sometimes we move it fast, sometimes we move it slow, but we're always moving it. Okay, number four, manding and man training. We've talked a lot about this on the show, that what we want is the person to be requesting. Because requesting is clean, it's clear. It's if I want something, and I want the phone, and I point at the phone, you know I want the phone, and you know you don't have to go look for something to reward me because the reward is the thing I asked for. And so if I point to the phone, that's communication. I'm telling you I want the phone, and the quickest way to build language is to reward that. You want the phone? I'm giving you the phone. Good asking. And I give you the phone for a period of time, right? And then I'm going to move the goalposts. But really, when we start manding and man training, they want this like 200 to 400 times an hour. I don't even understand how somebody can do that, but good technicians can do that. We as parents just need to be doing it as much as possible. So here's the fun thing with that. I'm always talking to parents about, you know, how many hours and whatever, but really what we want is for every waking hour, for especially for young children, but I say for teens and adults too, why not? If we're trying to build language, let's make every single hour something that is educationally enriched and fun. So that all of our downtime is what we consider educationally enriched. So if I'm waiting in line at the car wash, right? Because we're going to have this big, fun car wash experience, but now we're behind five cars and we're waiting. We don't just sit there and stare out the window. We make it fun. Maybe we play a game and we say, I spy, right? Because that's something that can build language, right? We're filling every single moment. Well, when you make the world, when you start thinking about, okay, I need my child to request things 100 times an hour. This is my goal for today, that 100 times an hour, they're going to have things that they're going to request. It automatically forces you to make an educationally enriched environment. It makes their environment, because if you think, oh my gosh, I got to have 100 things around here that they're going to want to point to, then you start taking toys and putting them in very prominent places. And you're not going to do this forever. But when we're trying to build language and do this man training, you're going to put all their favorite toys where they can see them. And we can play like Toy Store and be like, okay, the toys are here. Which toy would you like? I'm the shopkeeper. And which toy do you want? And whatever the child, you know, they're reaching or grasping for something, great. And then so you take it and you go, oh, you want the dog? You can have the dog. This is the dog. The dog is now yours to play with. What do you want next? And now they request something else. And we gradually build, you know, first they're pointing or grabbing, right? And maybe we just delay by a second and we just say, it's a fish. This is a fish. You want the fish? Can you say as you're handing it to them? And any approximation, you're giving them the fish. That's how we move the goalposts. But if you truly want them to be manding, you got to make their environment a really happy place where there's things that they want. And maybe you put them just a little bit out of reach so they can't grab them on their own. That's not teasing. That's creating an educationally enriched environment where they have to ask for things. And when they ask for them, they get them. Here's the thing with the manding. If you really want to be effective in man training, if they ask for it, they get it, right? Now, for our kids that are struggling with communication, you know, they're not going to ask you to go to Disneyland because they don't have a way of communicating that. So you're putting physical things in front of them, whether, you know, it's a big jar of jelly beans, which, by the way, you know, when they ask for a jelly bean, you don't have to give them the whole jelly bean. You can have a little plastic knife there and cut the jelly bean into four pieces and they get one quarter of a jelly bean. We don't have to be insane and make them be diabetic, right? But if we want to build language, we're going to make whatever it is, make their environment someplace that it feels really fabulous for them where they're going to request things. It's a good time when you're in the man training if you think of it in the right way. Okay, number six, we're going to give attention to communication. So many years ago, I was at a conference and I was nervous because I was going to have to speak in front of a room of like 880 people. And it was the night before and I was really in my head about what I was going to say. It was probably the first time that I was talking to that big of a crowd, and they were all like professionals working in the field of autism, and I felt less than, you know, I was just really in my head. And we were walking as a group to this restaurant where we were all going to go, and there was a reception and whatnot. And I remember I was walking with a doctor and a professional, and again, you know, he was talking to me, and I was trying to feel intelligent because I don't feel that way a lot of times. Really in my head about the speech and really in my head about talking to this doctor. And there was a family walking in front of us that wasn't with our group. And there was a little girl who was probably four, seemed very typically developing to me, but her parents were walking and talking. And she was going, Dad, 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 look at that. And she was pointing to something. And the dad kept ignoring her, or he would turn around and go, I'm talking. And it just kept happening. And this little girl who just kept saying things, and she was like, oh, look, it's a boat, because we were in San Francisco by a pier. Look, it's a boat. Oh, look, it's a picture of a dolphin. Look, it's this, it's that. And eventually he wasn't listening to her, so she started pulling on the sleeve of his arm, and he was walking ahead of her and not holding hands with her or anything, because he was deep in this conversation with somebody, which I'm sure was really important to him. But here was his little girl who was doing everything in the world that she could talk to him. And then eventually she like punched him in the butt. And then he turned around and he read her the Riot Act. And I very loudly said, it's always so hard for me to watch children who are communicating be ignored. And I think, and it was very passive aggressive on my part, and I think the dad heard it. The doctor that I was with kind of stopped, and I thought, oh, I've embarrassed him because I've been very passive aggressive. But then he, at a meeting a week later, said, you know, I was chatting on about this, and then Shannon drops this thing. And he said, I don't think I think about how often my kids say something and I miss the miracle of it. Because that was part of what I was saying, too, that this miracle of language that parents tend to ignore. And I do think that one of the great things, and I know some of you are in a very bad place today with, you know, you're not where you need to be and where you want to be, but I got to tell you, on this journey, you're going to find that there are some gifts that come into you for needing to look at things from a different perspective. And one of the different perspectives that autism brings is that you don't get to ignore the miracle of language. You do not have the privilege of ignoring it. And when you tune into that and go, oh my gosh, I need to pay attention to every piece of communication that my child gives me because it's precious and we're building it, then some of the good things start to happen because you will notice that your child is communicating with you. And if we want to build towards language, we have to honor where they are communicating right now. And punching him in the butt was a form of communication, but she said so many other things before that were amazing for a four-year-old to say, Dad, 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 look at that. Who among us, of our group of people, would ever let that go? We wouldn't, right? Because we long for that. He had the world and he was saying, don't bother me. So we're not going to let Dad, Dad, Dad look at that go, right? But we also can't miss the ways that our kids communicate with us. And sometimes they'll make a little noise. They'll go, right? And that's because they're having an emotion because something is happening. And we need to be tuned into them. It's exhausting. It's because we all want a break too. But find the break when you're not with your child. Don't take the break when you're with your child. Tune into that and be like, what are you seeing right now? And then look around and go, are you seeing the boat? That's a boat. Tune in to what they're saying. And it might not be a sound. It might be a motion that they make. That sometimes our kids hand flap when they see something that's exciting to them. And if you see that, tune into it and say, what are you seeing right now? Can you point to what, you know, you're seeing right now that's making you happy? I want to see what you're seeing. I'm telling you, when you tune into your kiddos that way, you will see the world that they are seeing, and it's beautiful and it's exciting. And then you'll build on that level of communication. This is where you get to the good stuff. Okay, so always give attention. I hate it when I'm at the store and I see a little kid who is like dancing around. And then finally, you know, they start putting their hands between their legs and they go, oh, mom, I got to go to the bathroom. Mom, and the mom will always say, you'll have to wait. Oh, like, you can't tune out. She told you 32 times before she told you she had to go to the bathroom. And listen, the world is busy and life is busy, and it's very hard to tune into our children 24/7. Oh my gosh, exhausting, which is why I really recommend respite, 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 get somebody else in, take your time away from your child. But we, even when we're a Target, if your child starts dancing around, be tuned in and go, do you have to go to the bathroom? Can you tell me that you have to go to the bathroom? Help them to recognize the symptom that they're having when they're having it. Build, give attention to communication. And it's all communication, my friends, all of it. Okay, I don't know which number I'm on. 6. Okay, work on oral motor separately, but in a fun way. Do you remember that old show, Minute to Win It? And they would have all these different things that you had to do, and you know, you had to jump up and down and make ping pong balls come out of it was like a tissue box, and you had to make them come out, and it was crazy. People would jump around. Well, some of it was oral motor stuff, and it was great. And there was one that was taking an Oreo cookie or a cookie like that, a sandwich cookie, and putting it on your forehead and then moving your mouth around. Your head is back, right? Moving your mouth around to try to get the cookie into your mouth without it falling to the ground. Brilliant oral motor. Now, it's hard. That stuff is hard, but there's so many things you can do. If you just put in fun oral motor exercises on Pinterest, I firmly believe that we all need a Pinterest account, but if you were to put that in and search it up, you'd come up with 32 different things. There are people who put, you know, depending on what your child's diet is and what they can handle, they'll take something like pudding and put it all around their child's lips, and they'll say, okay, take your tongue, and you gotta, you know, demonstrate it. You take your tongue and, you know, wipe it all off. I don't want to mess up my lipstick, but you know what I'm talking about, right? So we have to find fun ways to work on oral motor. I love all the little silly songs. What's the one that it's about the bumblebee? And you put it in your mouth and you and make noises like the bumblebee is in your mouth, and there's a song about smashing the bumblebee. I don't know what it is. But there are all these really fun things to work on oral motor. By the way, just singing silly songs, fun way to work on oral motor, right? But we want to find, you know, I love to do with all of the kids in my family, I always do tongue twisters with them. And that was something that we would do in the car with Jem all the time, is try to figure out what's the funniest tongue twister that we could come up with. And you can just look those up. That's a great way to work on oral motor if they're already speaking, but they can't be understood. But even before, when kids aren't speaking, we want to be working on the oral motor piece to be able to help them, to be able to move more oral motor. Again, bubbles, a great way to do that. Eating crunchy food is a great way to do that. A million things. I could talk endlessly about this, but why not make it fun? Summer is at hand. Go on Pinterest, look up some of those things, and work on that. You don't need to tell them that you're working on oral motor. Don't do that. Say, we're gonna have fun here, and this is what we're gonna do. If you see that there isn't enough lip control, and it may be, you know, I want to be fair, because I'm somebody who taught college theater and taught voice and diction at college. So I have access to a whole bunch of things already and already knew about this. But you probably, if your child has a diagnosis, have someone on your team that's a speech and language pathologist. And so ask them, say, what parts, like, are we working on, like, is their lip, they don't have as much control there? Is it total face control? Is it tongue? I could tell you all the technical terms for it, but the tongue has to be able to hit a lot of different places around the mouth to be able to make a lot of sounds. But ask your speech and language pathologist, say, what sounds is he or she having trouble with? Explain to me how that is made. What exercises, or what do you call that, so that you can look it up on Pinterest and say, I'm working on stop plosives. So what are great words and games to work on stop plosives, right? And I'm sure you'll find it. If you don't, write to me because I can. If you know what it is, if you've asked the speech and language pathologist what it is, then I can tell you. Here are some examples of fun games for stop plosives. You know, we have a Autism Live Pinterest board. I haven't worked on it in a while, but during the pandemic, I really made an effort to build up the Pinterest board with a lot of fun things on it. So definitely check out what we've got going on there. Okay, next. This very important, not to take the frustration personally. And you know what? I say this to parents, but you know who else I say this to? Everyone working with individuals on the autism spectrum. I don't understand why people take the frustration personally. I mean, I guess I do as a parent. The professionals, I'm like, don't take it personally. And I think a lot of them are very good at this, and some of them struggle with it. But I think we need to get very real and accepting of the fact that sometimes when you're working on something that's hard, doesn't matter who you are, if you are a 3-year-old on the spectrum or you're a 35-year-old not on the spectrum, when you're not good at something and it doesn't come easily to you, you're probably going to experience some frustration. And again, as my son said to me when he was 10, nobody ever dies from frustration, and frustration is a sign that change is about to happen. Great. Then we don't have to put the emotional component of frustration in. I know it's hard when your child seems to be mad at us. Oh, I hate it. I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. But you know what? It's also a really good sign, too. Because what it is a sign of is that your child is trying. It's a sign that they trust you to share their frustration, right? It's a sign that they're thinking it through. It's a normal emotion to have when you're not good at something. But we can easily, if we don't take on the emotion of it and instead take it as a lesson and say, you know, good job. Yes, this is very frustrating. Would you like to ask for a break? If you want to take a break, we can take a break. Or you can say, here's something different that you can try. What we're actually doing is parenting in that moment to help our child to know how to deal with frustration. What a gift. What a gift. So divorce yourself from the emotion of taking it personally. Don't get involved in that. I know it's hard, especially if your child hits in frustration. Really hard not to take it personally if somebody hits you. But it's even more important than that we teach a child, this is what you do with your frustration, you know. And in the moment, you would never talk to them about that, right? You give absolutely no attention to hitting. Number 7 is hard, Joanne. It is hard. But if you can get this piece, and let's say you can't get it 100% of the time. I don't think we're going, mastery for this would not be 100% of the time, right? But let's say you could get this 50% of the time. I will tell you that you will grow, your relationship with your child will grow, and your child's relationship with frustration will become a much healthier relationship, right? Because they will learn what to do with all of those feelings. I had great parents, but they never said, here's what you do when you're frustrated. I would have sat up straight for that lesson, right? I wish that I had had that lesson, and we have the opportunity to take control of that lesson for our kids in the moment and help them to know what to do it, to language it, ask for a break. We can, you know, sometimes a thing to do when they're frustrated is to give them something we know they'll be successful. They call that behavior momentum. So if you're trying to get something and it's really, really hard, we revert back to something. So it could look like this, that I'm trying to get a child to say oscillating sprinkler. I would never, as anything other than a joke, right? And I'm rewarding the approximations, but I'm moving the goalposts, but at a certain point they get frustrated. And so then I say, okay, say fish. And they say fish, and I go, yeah, great job, great job. Now say us, right? That's behavior momentum. I took you back to something I knew you'd be successful at so I could give you the reward for it, and now I'm going to break it down for you, us. Say sir, say late, right? So that I can build up to oscillating sprinkler. So, right, but I stopped in the middle and I gave them something that I know they'd be good at, and that's a way to deal with frustration too. Great, great, great tools to not only teach your child how to grow language, but to how to deal with the frustration of life. Really, really important. Okay, number 8 is keep your communication simple. And depending on the age of the individual that you love on the spectrum and their skill level, you're going to fit this to what their needs are, right? But we want to be clear. So if they've been tested and they have almost no expressive language and very little receptive language that we can test, we're really going to keep this simple. And a lot of times people get frustrated because they go, oh, that's when the behavior technicians, they go, touch car, which I also hated. But if you don't understand anything, again, I go back to the example, if I go to a foreign country and somebody says to me, you know, I would like you to do this and do that and do whatever, and then I will be very grateful, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. None whatsoever, right? I had this happen at a light the other day that I don't know what the deal was, but there was a guy who was ahead of me in a truck and I was behind him, and he started, you know, he turned around and he was clearly talking to me and he was like this and this and this and this. And I said, I have no idea what you're saying to me. None whatsoever. But if he had said, I am turning, I would have known what he was doing, right? But instead he was gesturing and he was, you know, sometimes the gesture was part of what he was saying. I don't know. And now I'm frustrated. And now he's frustrated, right? So we're not participating in that. We are going to be really clear so that if I say phone and I'm pointing to it and I say phone, right? This is what this is a phone. And I guarantee you, because they're interested in this, they will start to say, phew. You know, if that's something that they have the ability to do because they want this, now they're going to be requesting it. Some kids don't have the ability, oral motor, or the connection to their vocal cords to say "fa," right? And then it becomes a much harder thing where we got to teach that first, but that goes with the oral motor and meeting them where they are. But keeping it simple, keeping it super simple. You know what I keep watching, and it comes up in my Facebook watch all the time, is, and this is what I got Dr. Grampy Shea for Christmas, are the little buttons for the dogs to learn how to communicate. It's killing me. It's just killing me, all these videos with the dogs. But I see people making a common mistake where they say too many words to the dog when they're teaching it. They have to keep it simple, but the dogs are communicating. If they keep it simple, the dogs are communicating. I am not comparing our kids to dogs. But what I do think is worthwhile is if you watch those videos, you can see very clearly, they're like, the dog's not going to get that because you didn't keep it simple enough. And I want you to be thinking that way too. I got to keep it simple. Number 9, the bubbles are the equivalent. So I just think the bubbles are the most magical thing because I watch them in a session get my child to request bubbles. That, you know, first they would crack open the, and here's the thing, bubbles are reinforcing. Bubbles are something that requires someone to be using some oral motor because you have to purse up and blow. That's oral motor, right? And so they are a thing that gets requested a lot. They're kind of the perfect thing. And bubbles, that's stop plosive sounds. So great things to work on. So you get, and they're cheap. They're perfect, right? And so you get a thing of bubbles. Maybe it's $1, and you crack it open and you pull it out with the wand, and kids know what this is. But you dip it in and you pause for a second and then you blow, right? And the bubbles come and they're like, oh. Now they come back and there's this look of expectation. Now, we could work on the sign for more. We could give them a thing that says bubbles on it that they give you, and that's a way to communicate. And when they give it to you, you go, oh, you want more bubbles? And we always are going to language it, right? Oh, you want more bubbles? And then we blow, right? And we get them to the point where they know, if I ask for bubbles, so that's the man training part, if I ask for bubbles, you're going to give me bubbles. Now I start moving the goalpost away. So before I blow, I go, buh, 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 bubbles, and I blow, and I'm building up this bubbles expectation, and they get excited. It's kind of like when you do the 1, 2, 3 woo with kids, right? They like want the 1, 2, 3 because they know the woo is coming afterwards, right? We're building up that expectation, but I'm also modeling the sound, bubbles, and then I blow, right? And you will see that if you pause, so they come back and they maybe they give you the card, but oh, you want more bubbles? Okay. And you pause for a second. After you've done it like 12 times, you will see kids, they will automatically, they will go, because their mirror neurons turn on and they want you to do it and they don't know how to make you to do it. So they're going, and they don't even know that they're doing it. Well, that's great. Now we're working on oral motor, and eventually we're going to put sound to that so that they go, buh, and you say to them, say, buh, and I'm going to blow the bubbles, and then I blow the bubbles. And then I say, buh, buh, blow the bubbles. Then it say, bubbles, and I blow the bubbles. And I watched them do this with my son, and they got to bubbles. I don't know that they got to bubbles in the first session, but they got to bubbles very quickly, within a couple of days. And I was like, look at that. Because once you see, okay, that's possible, then you have buy-in and you want to spend your every waking moment having it, because he was thrilled. He didn't know he was working hard on something. He was jumping up and down and going, bubbles, 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 right? Or buh, 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 or handing the card over, right? Because he wanted more of it. He wasn't having a miserable time. He was loving the bubbles. And when you give them the ability that, oh, if I ask for it, I'm going to get it, they are happy and working and don't even know that they're working, right? So I say bubbles or an equivalent, because some kids are older and bubbles aren't what they want, but what is it that they do want, right? And what can be the equivalent? And this is where you got to tell me what could possibly be the equivalent, but you want something that is that level of reinforcing, hopefully something that, you know, has a short time span before you want to do it again, right? Because if what they want is a steak, right, then you got to cut up the steak in itty bitty little pieces, and sometimes that doesn't make it as fun, right? So what would be the equivalent? But bubbles is a pretty exciting thing, and I know teenagers that love some bubbles. Maybe they're bigger bubbles, and they're the gazillion bubbles, and they get inside the bubble. Oh, we did that later with my son, and he loved that. But you want something that's super reinforcing that we can move the goalposts on. Okay, but number 10, meet them where they are. I just want everybody to take a second pause and think about exactly where the person that you love in your life, that you would like to see them have more language, where are they right now? And instead of thinking of all the things that they can't do, will you take a moment and think about all the things that they can do and all the ways that they add to your life? And I want to ask you to find the way to be literally on their level. If they're sitting on the floor and the thing that they love to play with is cars, get on the floor and play with the cars. And if they make the noise brrr, while they're doing the car, hey, that's a good oral motor noise. Let's make more of those, right? If they're not, then you make the noise and see if they make the noise. Meet them where they are. If you have a 17-year-old who is nonverbal, and you're like, it's the great tragedy of your life that you can't have a conversation with your child, I want to ask you not to let go of that, but I want you to leave that on the table, but look at the other things on the table. Like, is your child a brilliant artist? Is your child someone who loves to play with string? Like, what is their thing? Meet them where they are. We know the kids, I had a string here a minute ago. We know kids who love to go like this with a string. Can you see my little string? They love to go like this. Well, okay, let's go buy some different color thread. And you play with it for a while. I mean, it's kind of fun. And meet them where they are. But that's what I would do. I would go buy a bunch of different colored embroidery thread, and I would cut a piece, and I would pick it up, and I would go, red. And I would do this, and I would play with it. And then I would say, red, and give it to them, and have them play with it. And then I would pick up one and go, blue. And I would meet them there, you know? And I think when we get into this mindset about, okay, where is there? And how can I fit myself to it? How can I be in the place where they are already communicating and join them there? I think you're going to find really amazing things. So I know I certainly did, and I know many, many people that have found that it's like, wow, there's a whole world here. And it's not that he's in his completely own world. It's that he's looking at the world that we share together in a way that I haven't looked at it before, and maybe it's worth looking at. And I think you'll find, once you key into their method of communication, that the world's kind of your oyster at being able to build from there, like pizza dough, building it out. Now, everyone doesn't get to vocal communication. It's just a fact, right? We have not cracked that nut. But let me tell you that the numbers have completely flipped in the last, 20 years. The numbers have flipped of the number of people on the autism spectrum who do have vocal communication, right? It used to be that the vast majority of people on the autism spectrum didn't speak throughout their life. Now the vast majority of them do speak. So don't give up on the spoken language thing, but don't discredit every other form of communication and fail to listen to it. It's already there. Part of what you've been wishing for is at hand. You want to be able to communicate with the child, teen, adult in your life. You can. And you can grow that communication. So meet them where they are. We're totally out of time. We're over time. But I love you all. We're back with Dr. Graham Pichet tomorrow. We've got great guests joining us on Wednesday. It's going to be a good week. So be with us all week long. If you have questions for Dr. Graham Pichet for tomorrow, I can't remember what the topic is. Is it joint attention? It is not. No, I can't remember what it is. I always put Trayvon on the spot and ask him in the last seconds instead of writing it down for myself and putting it in front of myself and helping myself. What do I need? I need a visual prompt. That's what I need. Do you know what it is, Trayvon? We might have to go without it. But we'll answer questions of any ilk tomorrow. It doesn't... Elopement. Oh, well, of course, because we need to be talking about that. It's almost summer. So we're going to talk about elopement tomorrow. That is the topic, but we will take questions on absolutely any topic tomorrow with Dr. Graham Pichet. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.